8:32, time for History on the Radio, our monthly feature with local storyteller J.W. Ballinger. Big week for the Randolph County Historical Society. Their annual meeting is tomorrow night.
It is.
And maybe that's where we can start. The purpose of the Historical Society and your programs here.
Well, of course, the Historical Society is intending to preserve and interpret local area history, and that includes all the towns in Randolph County and Randolph County, and sometimes we even branch out into little areas right next to the county because of the overlap of school districts and things of that nature. So that's one of the main reasons that the Historical Society is here, and we are always receiving new items for display. Sometimes we have to store them for a while, but we try to change the displays and add to those things, and I certainly enjoy that part of the Historical Society, and that's one reason why I do what I do here on the radio. It is a little bit of work to do some research on some of these things, but frankly, I'm working from my memory in many cases. And what this does for me is, as I do research, it adds to those memories. In fact, it brings out things that I might have forgotten, and that's what I hope it does for the listeners out there, is that you all have memories about places and people and things that you did when you were growing up in this area, and that some of the stories I have will kind of magnify those or bring them back to the front of your memory.
Okay. Today's topic, I don't think we've talked about filling stations.
We haven't. Yeah. We haven't. Now, several programs we've talked about neighborhood grocery stores, and that was some of the favorite programs that I've heard from people that I've done. In the early 40s, there were still 50-some grocery stores in Moberly and many more in around the county. In 56, there were 37. In 1960, there were still 30 grocery stores. But today, I'd like to discuss some other businesses that were scattered around town. And these all result from the success of the automobile. That is, of course, gas stations or filling stations. Now, I'm going to start where I'm familiar, in my old stomping grounds near the Ballinger Blacksmith Shop that was on Alt Street. Talk about that and Coates and Morley. And we'll have a few stops in addition to filling stations up and down Morley Street by the years 49, 56, and 60. And by 60, of course, Morley Street was known as the Magic Mile because of the growth of the businesses out there. Again, while most of the discussion this morning will be about gas station, I will reference a number of other businesses just to provide context to the locations and that sort of thing. So let's begin. In 1949, I'm starting close to home and my first gas station recollection. Now, I'm probably five going on six when this happened. I'm crossing Alt Street from the fire station in the blacksmith shop, heading east at the corner of Coates and Alt, and there's a closed Standard station there. It's kind of a white brick building, and that building's set there unused in my memory for quite some time. I was heading to my friend's house. Stephen Barton Wright lived around the corner. In fact, this old gas station, when it was open, was Wright's Standard Service, and Stephen lived right behind, and I would sometimes carry one of my toys with me. But on this particular day, I had an old wooden boat, and I was headed to Stephen's house. I noticed that the front door of that old Standard station is open. So I peek inside, being rather curious, and see a jumbled mess of all kinds of paper goods and other items strewn on the floor. And my eye is caught by what looks like a complete small booklet of receipts. It has the name of the business on it, the carbon paper in it, and boy, this booklet goes in my back pocket. The station, again, was known as Wright Standard Service, and it was managed by Harold H. Wright. So any of you out there that remember Harold, let me know what you knew about him. It was, of course, a brick building painted off white, and it set next to what became later Corrine Faraday's beauty shop. Now, this happened in later years, not in 49. After visiting with my friend Stephen, is back to the blacksmith shop where my mother, Maureen, promptly sent me scooting back across the street to put that book back where I got it. So I did. I put it back in the front, right there where I'd picked it up. Now, the East Side neighborhood had a variety of businesses near the Coates Street crossing. It was a busy place, and because the crossing was often closed, there was a complement of businesses on the East Side to complement those on the West Side. Let's start right there at Moulton and Coates. At 101 East Coates, there was a Dairy Queen operated by Mr. Brown, and they served soft-serve ice cream cones. And there I had the opportunity to have the first time to have a cone dipped in chocolate shell, and that was neat. My grandfather and I would spend a lot of time down at that corner watching passenger trains, and so from time to time I would get an ice cream cone. Another favorite place was 113 East Coates. Now this building is part of what's now Wabash Grill, and that was the East Side Sundries. I've talked about that before. A quarter dollar went a long way at the Sundries. You could get a fountain drink and a Walt Disney comic book, and you were all set. Now, just recently, the owner of the Sundries returned to Moberly for his 80th birthday, and it was great to see Charles Barkas and many of his families. They came back and traded old memories about the Sundries and living up above the store and all about the East Side. Again, at 201 was the closed Standard Station. Now, we head on down the street towards East Park. At 210 East Coates, there was a second filling station in the neighborhood. This was across the street. It was called Hudson Oil Company. It is now a small used car operation and has been for many, many years. But Hudson back in the day was well known for beginning the gas wars here in Moberly. They'd drop their gas prices and all of a sudden there'd be changes in gas prices all over town. At the corner of Coates and Morley was another favorite stop at a filling station. This was operated by the Lewis family. It was called Lewis Service, and it later became a mobile dealer. And I remember the brothers Rube Lewis and Mitchell Lewis, although I knew Mitchell, I believe, as Mick. And they ran that show there. Now, that was a weekly trip that my grandfather and I took, and it would usually end up sitting inside the Lewis station having a bottle of Coca-Cola and a Baby Ruth candy bar. Now, I couldn't eat the whole candy bar, nor could I drink the whole soda, so of course my grandfather helped me out and we shared that each time we'd go. A highlight of that trip was usually the friendly chatter that occurred there. Lots of discussion, and before the time spent there was over, a high-pitched voice from the tire repair area would say, "Well, how's the little blacksmith talking to me?" Now that guy was Carl Buster Graves. Now Buster was just a fine young man, and he did the tire repair there at Lewis, and always a fun time to visit with him. Now, let's travel back down Morley Street a little bit towards the corner of Rollins and Morley. At 101 North Morley, there's a Shell station, and it's operated by a fellow named Herschel Thompson. Mr. Thompson would continue to work for Clyde Reed, who was the Shell jobber, and eventually become manager of a very prominent station out at the corner of 24 and 63. Now, Herschel Thompson and his family would end up being neighbors of mine. When my family moved to Rollins and Lauder Streets, they lived a block to the south at Lauder and Burkhart. And the Thompson family, the kids went to East Park, and we knew them and grew up with them and fine people. As we head north on Morley, the next station is 117-119 North Morley, and it was operated by the Ripple brothers. They were named Malcolm and Ralph. Ralph's wife was a teacher, Bernice, at East Park School, and she taught the sixth grade. Now, this station building is still there, but because the underpass was built on Morley Street, that station was forced to close and move when that underpass was constructed. Now, by the way, just across the street from the Ripple Brothers filling station was a really unique outdoor facility called Van's Ice House. It was an ice house, and also in the summertime during the season for fruit and vegetables, it was also a fruit market. And I remember being there getting maybe a watermelon for the summer and having those old steam engines come up from Hannibal along the old MK&T line and pass over Morley Street before that underpass was built. There were a number of other filling stations near the intersection of Coates and Morley, including the Lowry City Service. And just a little farther down the street north of Union Avenue was a favorite place for me called A&W Root Beer. Another stop that my father loved to make, my father Johnny would take the car a little farther out on Morley, and at 1200 there was the Imperial Service Station and convenience store. Now, this was unique because this was something that not every filling station had. Of course, they might have soda pop and candy bars and things of this sort. But the Imperial was operated by a fellow named Charlie Hardig, who was really a go-getter. And I remember very distinctly that out at the gas pumps were cabinets. And these cabinets were filled with all sorts of wonderful things that boys could use, like pocket knives and not lighters, of course. That was something that my dad or grandpa would use. But all sorts of things, watches and what have you. Just a little convenience store right at the pump that would get you to buy something while you were filling up your tank. And, of course, he had Mr. Hardy had people come out to fill up your tank. It wasn't self-service as they are today. Once in a while, I'd get to buy something, but not very often. Now, I'm going to stray a little bit from filling stations to some other memories that kind of churn up here. Now, these are things I don't remember, but I've been told about. A couple of restaurants out on North Morley that I'd like for the people out there who are listening maybe to provide some information. At 1400 North Morley in 1949 was the Hickory Inn, and it was operated by Mary Forbes. I just have an idea that she was part of the Forbes family that eventually had the operation out at 24 and 63, the business intersection. But I don't know. So if anyone knows about the Hickory Inn. Now here's another one. One block north of that, at 1500, was the El Hogar Cafe. And it was operated by James and Francis Enoch. And again, I've heard of that, but I don't know much about it. At 1503, there was a favorite place of mine. We just get out and ride and make a stop there. It was David's Donuts, and this was on the lot where McDonald's is located. And it was built inside an old filling station, and I have no idea at this point, maybe someone can tell me, what filling station that was out there at that time and maybe what years it was operation. But I do remember that Ms. David's Donuts were just, they smelled so good, and they were so fresh, so light, and so we enjoyed stopping there. And I would like more help on Mrs. David, who ran that shop. Tell me about her family and that sort of thing. In fact, if anyone has memories on any of these stops along Coates and Morley, I'd love for you to contact me by phone or by email or write me a letter, old style, if you like, and put in it what you know, because it adds to my memories and hopefully will add to other people's as we continue to do these kinds of shows. We'll stop at 1706 North Morley. That was the Halliburton Service Station and Tourist House. So evidently, this was probably on the north side of the 2463 intersection where there was a filling station and probably some tourist cabins. That was operated by Guy and Beulah Halliburton. And again, please let me know if you know more about it. And yep, there wasn't any Reed's Corner yet. This was 49. In fact, the intersection at 24 and 63 may well have looked like what it was earlier, and that was Moberly's Airport. The Air Dome was out there, and of course this airport was moved to its present location out north of Moberly. So we're up to 1956.
Okay, good place to take a break here, and hopefully we're going to have some time as we move along to open the phone lines to your memories as we move along. Stick with us. It's 15 before 9, History on the Radio.
This is John Meistrick at Central Bank of Moberly. If you need money to remodel your home, add a deck or garage, purchase a new boat, pickup or car, then stop by Central Bank and we will help you decide what loan options are best for you and your family. Whatever your needs, we want to help. Central Bank of Moberly, member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLSR 539-838.
Associated Electric is part of the nation's largest utility system with operations at the Thomas Hill Energy Center of Clifton Hill. AECI understands the importance of supporting the community. That's why Associated Electric Cooperative Incorporated, Thomas Hill Energy Center, encourages you to help the community you live in by giving back and helping others. Associated Electric Cooperative Incorporated, Thomas Hill Energy Center of Clifton Hill, a proud supporter of the Westrand Fire Protection District. We now have two new sports features on Central Mo Info. Moberly Motors introduces Score Stream, which features a page for all area schools plus instantly updated scores and schedules. Bank of Cairo and Moberly presents our archived audio page, which will have all our weekly games archived for your listening pleasure. two more reasons to go to CentralMoInfo.com. ScoreStream, courtesy of Moberly Motors, driven by tradition. And archived audio sponsored by BCM, because caring matters.
All right, time travel to 1956.
JW. Yep, but before we do, you'd ask the question about the Dairy Queen on Coat Street. So if people out there are wondering where in the world was that, if you remember the old Baltimore Hotel, that three-story building, a very nice hotel in the 1880s, and it was an apartment house when I was growing up, and around the corner on Moulton, there was a service window, and that's where the ice cream was served. So give a little context there. Okay, 1956. I'm now 11 years old, live on Rollins Street, but I returned to Coates and Ault a lot of times during the summer and during the year as I spend time with my grandparents. Now, the old Standard Station is soon going to become something called a Quick Chick, with roasted chicken and ice cream, and competing with another favorite ice cream place, which is just right across the street, the Randolph Dairy, which is now an empty building, but had an art department in it for a while. Gone is the Dairy Queen from 101 East Coates, and it's now located on the Magic Mile at 1101 North Morley. That's right across the street to the north from Advantage Real Estate, so that gives you an idea of where it is. The Lewis and Lowry stations still occupy the opposite corners on Morley, and the A&W still provides root beer and hamburgers down the street. And at 1200 North Morley, the Imperial's still there. And now we see out at the corner of 24 and 63, Jerry's Plantation and the Missouri Transit Bus Barn, but still no Reed's Corner. So we're going to zip right along to 1960. At 101 North Morley, there's the same Shell station that I talked about in 1949, but it's operated by a fellow named Ben Morgan. And Lowry's and Lewis service stations continue at Coates and Morley, as do the A&W, the Dairy Queen out on North Morley, and the Imperial. But the face of Morley Street is really changing. The Hickory Inn that was at 1400 is now the Pink Castle, and I hope there's some people out there that remember that building painted pink. And at 1409, a new service station has sprouted called Denny's. And right next to Denny's service station is the Rollaway Rink. So Moberly at one time did have a roller rink. Now, Ripple service has moved because of the underpass that was built for the railroad on North Morley Street, the 100 block. And they're now at 1413, and Ms. David's still making donuts where McDonald's will eventually be built. And Jerry's Plantation and the Missouri Transit Bus Barn are still at 1701. We're still waiting for Clyde Reed to construct his famous corner station just a few years later. And I hope someone out there maybe listening to this program can tell me what year Reed's Corner was built. This ends the tour of favorite gas stations and other places along Morley. And I'm very pleased to have been able to do this, and I hope to do an addition to it in future times. But let me know your favorite spots, whether it's to buy gas or get your tires fixed or who fixed your tires and all that kind of thing. So I hope you've enjoyed this little tour of filling stations.
I have. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got some other notes to finish up with and also open up the phone lines to you for your memories. It's 10 before 9.
Yesterday, I got a call from the IRS. They say I owe them over $16,000. I don't have that kind of money.
Don't fight the IRS on your own. Call U.S. Tax Shield and learn if you qualify for the IRS Fresh Start Initiative. If you owe at least $10,000 in back taxes, call now for a free and confidential tax debt analysis. Call U.S. Tax Shield now for a free tax debt analysis at 800-405-1225 now. 800-405-1225. 800-405-1225.
If you have hard water, the Limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate Limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
All right, we are back, and J.W. Ballinger, our local storyteller, is with us. We do have open phones. He posed a lot of questions trying to jog your memory bank, so if you've got some answers for us, you can go ahead and call in at 263-2424, Sheridan Valley Line 388-6424, or you can call 800-892-2300. Go ahead, J.W.
Got some other subjects. Yeah. I hope everybody's noticed that the old gymnasium at the school downtown at Rollins and Johnson has been razed, and want everyone to know that there were some important historical parts of that building that were saved. Volunteer efforts, along with some help from the city, we were able to save the two porticos, that is, the two entrances, the north and the south entrance to that gymnasium. They were taken down a piece at a time, that old kind of a sandstone granite. I don't know exactly what the material is, but worked up there for a couple of weeks off and on, and saved those two porticos, and not one piece was broken as we took it down, which it's extremely pleasing to me to have that saved. And how we're going to use them, we don't know. We'd like some ideas, but those have been saved, and we hope that at some point they can be used to embellish another historic area. Also, a number of items from inside the building were saved. Some things that I was proud to pass on was nameplates for at least a couple of teachers. We're still trying to find one teacher that had a nameplate there, but we found it for Paul Copenhaver and for Janice Mayfield, and those items have been passed on to them. That was those plaques showed which room they were in at the time they taught there. There will be some items that were saved from that building that will be in the Junk Junction sale handled by the Chamber of Commerce this coming weekend, and hope people will come downtown and see and even bid on some of those items. We talked earlier about the annual meeting of the Historical Society, and that's going to be at Trinity Methodist Fellowship Hall. And Tom Marshall, who was raised and grew up in Moberly, will be a featured speaker. We will elect officers and have some announcements about programs and events that the Historical Society is planning. Been a lot of work going on down there. We've assisted the county in beginning their historical area inside the new courthouse. We've got some new lighting, and you can see things really well in the museum right now. So if you have a chance to come to our annual meeting, if not, why, come see us when we're open. In regard to the Railroad Museum, it's almost finished. After almost a three-year time of putting things back together, we're almost done with that. So we can have tours of the museum, the Wabash Caboose, and the Indiana, but we'd like to do them by appointment. So if you've got a group or a family that's coming in and you'd like to do that, call us at 263-9396 and we'll schedule a tour for you. It takes a lot of volunteers to operate two buildings. And so we're going to try the Railroad Museum, open by appointment, and see how that works.
All right. Can we get a phone call in?
Sure can.
All right. We've got the 800 line ringing in. You're on with JW.
He was talking about the Pink Castle. I don't remember a business or whatever was there, but I remember being an Indian there that sold herbs and things. So I took my grandfather up there. I think it was in 57, 58, somewhere along in there, and he had some kind of herb that made tea, and it was supposed to get rid of the sugar diabetes, and it took him up there, and he bought some of it, and it didn't, when he drank it, it wouldn't show the sugar, you know, in the urine, but he got very, very sick because it wouldn't show the sugar up, but it wasn't getting rid of it.
Well, I'm sure there were a lot of those kind of items sold at the time to take care of all kinds of things. And I do remember the old Indian, but I don't remember his name, so somebody needs to call in and help me with that.
Right. It was at the Pink Castle.
Yes, Pink, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you for the call to the Moberly line. You're on with JW.
Morning.
Morning.
I recently received some family tree stuff, and apparently C.I. Brewer was, I guess, my grandfather, great-grandfather, I hadn't figured that out yet, was a coal mine owner, and he was killed when a car ran into his coal wagon near Esri's filling station west in Moberly. I wonder where that was.
I don't know that. Yeah. I've heard of that, but it might have been on Highway 24 towards Huntsville. Of course, there were lots of mines at Huntsville, and it just seems like that in 1936 there was a major catastrophe at one of the coal mines just west of Moberly, and the folks kind of gathered, the like the fire department, ambulance people, and what have you, gathered at the Esri service station for that catastrophe, kind of, you know, getting organized there. So that's about all I can tell you.
According to this, these were newspaper clippings that I've received. One of my uncles were killed in a cave-in in the mine where fallen rocks had fell on him, and it looked like the C.I. Brewer must have owned the coal mine. But I guess he had gotten hit by somebody from Huntsville close to this Esri station. So, yeah, it must have been out around toward Huntsville.
Yeah, that I'm not completely familiar with. Maybe some of our Huntsville residents or some of the people that had some folks in coal mining can remind us. But that's all I can tell you about that. But that's interesting information. Thank you.
Yeah, it looked like it all happened in the early 30s to mid-30s. So, yeah, okay. Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. You want to put in a plug for the next program?
Sure do. October, we're going to talk about World War I as one of the subjects, and I will have a guest with me who will talk about a family who suffered major losses of their children at the beginning and at the end of the World War I. So, this is the end. Actually, it is the 100th year anniversary of the celebration of the end of World War I. And this November, and so we're hoping that we can do some things to honor those people who served in that particular war. I know that we have some old World War I uniforms at the Historical Society, and we're trying to work with the ROTC folks at the high school, see if we can get a couple of those slender kids to wear them, because those old uniforms are small compared to uniforms and size of people today. But we're hoping to honor them during the...
So that'll be our next program.
Next program, yes.
Got about a minute. You had a couple final questions you wanted to throw out.
Well, I was going to mention Charlie Hartig in the Imperial and how Charlie was such a pusher as a filling station operator. But later on, he became the civil defense director during the Cold War. So here's a question. Where were civil defense shelters around the county? Where were they located? Remember where those signs were that said fallout shelters? A question recently suggested the possibility that the underground parking lot at the auditorium was one site. Now, I do know that there was a shelter inside the auditorium in the old handball court where a lot of things were stored. And I know there were some, East Park School was also a location. But I'd like to know if you all know where the defense shelters were around the county, these bomb radiation shelters that were scattered around that were supposed to help if we got into another conflict. So give me a call.
There you go. Thank you, J.W.
Thank you.
J.W. Ballinger, a local storyteller, on the Quick Slam this morning. Napa Auto.